The program you are listening to may contain language or material that could be considered offensive. The views expressed are those of the DJ, not necessarily those of WDOT or other WDOT station members. We therefore advise you to carefully consider whether you or your children should listen. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Red, White, and You show. My name is Nathan Jackman. Unfortunately, my co-host Dylan Saunders could not make it today, but nonetheless, we have a very special guest joining us here, Mr. Tom Schwazy, former congressman.
Hey, Nathan. How you doing?
Doing really great. Thank you for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So today, I wanted to talk about you and your campaign. But first, tell us about your background, your brief history of what you've done here on Long Island and what offices you've held and
I grew up in Glen Cove. My wife grew up in Glen Cove. I'm the youngest of five children. My father's an Italian immigrant. My mother is Irish and English. They lived a great American success story. My dad was the first kid in the neighborhood to go to college, fought in World War II, and got the Distinguished Flying Cross, and came home and went to Harvard Law School on the GI Bill. But the Italians weren't very popular because they had teamed up with the Germans during World War II, and he was very discriminated against. So even though he went to Harvard Law School, he couldn't get a job at a law firm. So he ended up going back to our hometown of Glen Cove, ran for a city court judge, and became the youngest judge in the history of New York State at 28 years old. What a country.
Wow. Yeah.
And my mom was a nurse, and like I said, I'm the youngest of five children. And I went to Boston College, and I went to worked for a company called Arthur Andersen and Company. I became a CPA. And then I went to Fordham Law School, and I clerked for the chief judge of the Eastern District. And I worked for Sherman and Sterling. And then I was the mayor of Glen Cove for 8 years. Did a lot of good stuff. And then I was the county executive in Nassau County for 8 years. And I was in Congress for 6 years. And I ran for governor of New York State back in 2022, and I didn't run for re-election for Congress. I got crushed in that race for governor and didn't run for re-election, and this guy George Santos won. And, you know, I thought I was out of politics. I thought it was over. I turned 60 years old in 2022, in August of 2022, and I lost the race for governor, and I figured, okay, it's over for me. I got to be happy with my wife and children. I'm a very fortunate guy. We have three kids, 28, 25, and 20. And my wife and I have been married for over 30 years. And I was happy. I was okay. I'm all right. And then George Santos became a bigger and bigger story. And people said, you got to run. So now I'm back in the game, and I'm running for Congress this year to try and help fix a lot of the problems we're facing in our country right now, because things are really broken and they need to be fixed.
So in terms of George Santos, you ran against him in 2020, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yes, I beat him by 15 points. He was kind of a nobody. Nobody ever heard of him. He wasn't from the area. Didn't ever meet him in person. Saw him on a Zoom once. It was during right in the middle of COVID 2020. Yeah. So there were very few public events. And when he did show up on a video, I was like, there's something unusual about this guy. Yeah. But we didn't really pay attention to him. And like I said, I beat him by 15 points. And then on election day, if people recall, it was COVID, and so there was a lot of voting by mail that took place. So he jumped onto the Trump stop the steal idea, that the idea that the election was stolen. He said, he went down on January 5th. Remember the January 6th insurrection?
Yep.
So he was down there on January 5th talking to big crowds of people saying, just like Donald J. Trump, they stole the election from me by using all these paper ballots that came in, which was just false and crazy. But he teamed up with the whole Trump network throughout the country on the Stop the Steal idea, and that's how he raised money, and he built a whole network of people. So he went from a guy who had no support, no money, no organization, no local contacts, but he tapped into the network of the Stop the Steal people, and that's how he became more of a candidate. And nobody really saw it coming. The newspapers didn't pay attention. Nobody reported on it. And it was never exposed that he was just a big phony.
Mm-hmm. And you have said that you want to fix what has been done in Congress. Can you explain that? Is that because of what George Santos did? That
no, it's much bigger than George Santos. Okay. George Santos is yesterday's news. Mm-hmm. What's broken in Congress and in our country is that everybody's got these concerns about, you know, the cost of living, they're concerned. Yeah. That, you know, there were never polls before the past few years that said parents are concerned their children are not going to do as well as they did. They're not going to be able to buy a house and live a life. You know, the people are concerned about the immigration crisis. All these people coming over the border. What's going? Is this really something happening here? Is this out of control? People are concerned every time there's a storm. You know, we had a rainstorm the other day. Everybody's like, is this another one of these flooding events? You know, what's with all these waves hitting the beach and all the erosion? What's with all that smoke that came down from Canada over the summers? Like, what if this went on for weeks? What would we do if that happened? You know, what's with these fires? And then these awful attacks in Israel were just so awful. And then, you know, Ukraine, is Putin really trying to take over? So we have all these things that are bothering us. We're worried about, we're thinking about them, and, you know, social media and kids are depressed and, you know, all these things we read about all the time. And we look to Washington, D.C., and we look to the Congress, and we say, what are you doing to help us? We got all these problems. What are you doing? And what are they doing? They're kicking the speaker out. Mm-hmm. They can't do a budget. They're threatening to shut the government down again. People are like, what about us? What about the things we're worried about? What are you doing to fix the problems? And they're not really doing anything except fighting with each other. There's a dysfunction that exists. There's all this anger and people attacking each other instead of actually solving problems. So my whole career has been about solving problems, cleaning up pollution, building buildings, helping people, balancing budgets, bringing money back to the district. I've always worked to try and solve problems. My campaign theme used to be Swazi gets it done. I get stuff done to help people. And that's why I'm in public life. It's not worth being in politics if you're just for the ego or for the competition. It's got to be that you're actually making the world a better place to live in. So right now, there's not much work being done in Congress to solve the problems that people face. I want to fix that. And I think I can because I've always run on this theme. And I'm being recruited to run for this seat based on that message because the Democrats – the brand on Long Island is terrible. We've lost every race. We've lost all the town supervisors. We've lost all the county races. We've lost all the congressional seats. The Democrats are in a lot of trouble here. And I'm a Democrat, but I'll work with anybody. I'll work with progressives. I'll work with conservatives. I'll work with anybody if you want to work together to actually solve problems and try and help people.
So you mentioned the affordability of Long Island and people being able to afford their homes on a salary. And many people, especially in the Port Washington community, can't afford to buy a house due to high tax rates and just the housing market is not that great right now. How do you suppose that we could change that? And what is your plan to help affordability?
Well, the most important thing that I'm focused on that's really concrete and tangible is there's a thing called the state and local tax deduction. Mm-hmm. When America first started the federal income tax code, so coming from the Washington, D.C., the states and the local municipalities, the mayors and the governors said, we don't want you doing a federal tax. We want to do it at the state and local level. We don't want you taxing us at the federal level. That'll stop us from being able to raise taxes at the local level. We don't want the federal control. We want local control. We want state control. And everybody agreed, okay, no, we'll fix that. We're going to have a state and local tax deduction. If you make $100,000 a year and you pay $10,000 in local property taxes and local income taxes, you can deduct that from your income. So you're only going to be taxed on $90,000 instead of $100,000. Mm-hmm. The idea is you're not supposed to be taxed on taxes you've already paid to the state and local level.
Yeah.
Well, that was in place for 100 years. And then in 2017, President Trump and the Republicans passed a bill, really rammed it through quickly, and they capped the state and local tax deduction. So people who are living in Port Washington and elsewhere who have property taxes of not $10,000, but $15,000 and $20,000, and income taxes on top of that, state income taxes, they can't deduct those taxes from their income. So they get taxed on the taxes they've already paid. It was a real body blow to the people who live in my district and throughout New York, quite frankly, and other high tax states like California, and our taxes are too high. I mean, that's what I ran for governor on, is the taxes are too high. But one of the things that saved us is that we had a state and local tax deduction.
Yeah.
So it was actually a subsidy of your taxes from the federal government. And, New York State gives more to the federal government. We're a net donor state. We send more to the federal government in income taxes than we get back in state aid and local aid from the federal government and services. So we're a big donor state to the federal government. State and local tax deduction was one of the big benefits we had. Now it's gone. And President Trump said, you know, I know it's going to hurt New York. I know it's going to hurt California, but they're not going to vote for me anyway. So I don't care. So now the whole thing is set to expire. And now I passed a bill in when I was in Congress. I passed it three times through the House of Representatives, despite tremendous opposition from the Republicans and opposition from some of the more progressive Democrats. But we got it through three times, but we couldn't get it passed in the Senate. So I want to go back to Washington and get it done and get it through the Senate even as well and get the president to sign it. The bill, the cap at $10,000 expires in 2025. It's going to be a massive fight between now and then. People don't understand that if you're a husband and wife and you're both working, maybe you're a teacher and a police officer or a teacher and a carpenter or you're a, you know, whatever. You're making $150,000 a year. You're not rich. But if you're making $150,000 in Oklahoma, you're living in a gated community with an in-home movie theater and a swimming pool. If you're living, if you're making $150,000 in North Dakota or in Iowa, you're living on Easy Street. You belong to the country club. So they think that our people, other parts of the country, think that our people are all rich. Now, we certainly have a lot of rich people here. But the reality is that a lot of people are just hardworking, solid middle-class people that are paying their bills. And we need the state and local tax deduction back. That's a big focus of mine. There's other things like affordability of prescription drugs that I've worked on before. We got some stuff done. We need to do more of that stuff. And we need to build more housing in our downtowns near our train stations. But that's another whole long conversation. The bottom line is I never want to see us lose our suburban quality. 95% of our property's got to stay the same with single family houses and parks and beaches and open spaces. But in our downtowns near our train stations, we have to create cool downtowns, exciting places where young people want to live, where people want to hang out. In the old days, people used to get married in their 20s. Now, if you get married, you get married in your late 20s, early 30s. Nobody from 20 to 30 is moving here because it's boring. Now, we like it boring. We want it boring. Yeah. That's why we move here. We want the streets to close down for the Little League parade, and we want low crime, and we like it boring. But if we want to attract young people here, we've got to have places for them to live in downtowns where they can hang out and see their friends and meet new people.
So just to be clear that you support single-family housing, because there has been a proposal from the state government that has tried to eliminate single-family housing.
Yeah, I ran against the governor on that issue. Okay. I totally opposed the idea of, you know, the state can come in and take away local control. I'm getting along with the governor now. I'm not fighting with the governor. But when I ran against her, I ran against her on, among other things, high taxes, and I didn't like her housing policies. And now she since has changed her housing policy, and she's trying to be more cognizant of the fact that the people of Long Island don't like the idea of the state dictating what local zoning should be. I don't like the idea of the state coming in and mandating what it should be.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of affordability, you mentioned prescription drug prices, so that leads into healthcare. Would you support expanding the Affordable Care Act, and do you support expanding the Affordable Care Act?
Yes, I do support the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, there's things that are not great about it, but the idea is to mend it, don't end it. Make it so it's better. Let's fix it. And it's been getting better. And there's more things that we can do to make it better, to make healthcare more affordable for people. But anybody who says they want to get rid of the Affordable Care Act doesn't know what they're talking about, because so many people would end up without insurance. And the idea of doing universal healthcare that people have proposed, single payer, which is a nice idea in theory. People who have great health insurance, especially union members or people who work for big companies or people that get good health insurance from their companies, are never going to let you take away their health insurance. It'll never happen. But we should constantly be working to try and insure more people. You know, New York State has the lowest rate of uninsured children and uninsured adults in the country. Florida, on the other hand, where everybody wants to move to these days because the taxes are so low, has the highest rate of uninsured children and the highest rate of uninsured adults. Florida will have problems in the next 10 or 15 years as they start to sprawl more. They have a lot of infrastructure problems. They've got a lot of environmental problems because a lot of places are not sewered. They see this red tide problem with all the nitrogen going into their water. People get more organized. They will get pockets of poverty and pockets of low-income people and pockets of seniors and other people that will start to demand more from their government than they currently have. New York State went through that as well, but that was, you know, decades and decades and decades ago. Nassau County, you know, where Port Washington is, was once the fastest growing county in the country. In 1947, Mr. Leavitt built the Leavitt homes. In 1950, we went from 250,000 to 400,000 people. But from 1950 to 1960, we went from 400,000 people to 1.2 million people, the fastest growing county in America. We saw explosive growth of residential home building. And then we had explosive growth of malls and strip malls and office buildings in the 60s and 70s. We were on fire. Grow. But then we suburban sprawled. We stopped growing. And that caused a lot of financial problems because we didn't expand our tax base. We didn't generate new revenues. And that's why it's important for us to think of how to expand our tax base but still preserve our suburban quality of life. That's where that cool down towns idea comes from.
Okay. So you've mentioned that climate change is a big issue, saying that, you know, many people have had issues with smog in the sky, flooding as we've experienced recently here in
Not just smog. We had those forest fires up in Canada. Yeah. It was like, you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
It was kind of freaky, right?
It looked orange outside.
It was scary.
Yeah.
What if it kept on going on for weeks and weeks and weeks? You'd be like, we can't even control this.
Yeah, you can't even breathe outside.
It's happened in Canada and it's coming down here. You know, this is real. This is real.
Yeah, I had to wear a mask outside and not inside, which is the opposite of what you did in COVID normally.
Yeah.
But there are many proposals for clean energy on Long Island, including wind farms that would be off the coast. Do you support legislation that would help build wind farms and or nuclear energy?
Yeah, I'm probably one of the leading environmentalists on Long Island over the past 30 years.
Yeah.
I was endorsed yesterday by the League of Conservation Voters, the Sierra Club, the Natural Resources Defense Council. I've always been endorsed by those groups. I was the New York State, for all of New York State, the environmentalist of the year 10 years ago. I've always focused on how to clean up the Long Island Sound, how to protect our water, how to protect our drinking water, clean up our drinking water, how to preserve open space, what little we have left here, how to make sure our air is clean. That's a very big thing for me. Yesterday, I had this big press conference where these groups endorsed me. I said, you know, 2 weeks ago Thursday was the 50th anniversary of the Endangered Species Act.
Yeah.
And, you know, the big symbol of that was the bald eagle. Well, it just so happened on the day of the 50th anniversary of the Endangered Species Act 50th anniversary, I was at my house and I was sitting at the table eating. And I looked out the window and I saw a bald eagle. I was like, whoa, is this really happening? And I found out later that day that it was the 50th anniversary of the Endangered Species Act. So it's like, you know, we take stuff for granted. When my kids were younger, probably like, you know, 20 years ago, we were walking through the Wellwind Nature Preserve and we saw a red-tailed hawk fly through the canopy of the trees. And then we went down to the Long Island Sound. We saw an osprey dive into the water and capture a fish. And I was like, wow, I don't remember seeing those birds when I was a kid. And I was like, is that because I was a kid and I wasn't paying attention? Because I was, you know, playing the same woods. Or is it because those birds weren't there? So I called up the Audubon Society and I said, you know, I grew up in 1960s and 70s. I don't remember seeing those birds there when I was a kid. Were they there then? They said, no, they'd all been killed off by DDT.
Wow.
And it wasn't until Rachel Carson wrote a book called Silent Springs that showed everybody the pesticides were killing all the wildlife that we started the environmental movement in our country. And, you know, those birds didn't come back in 10 years or 15 years or 20 years. It took a long time, but they're back. So we have to constantly work at preserving and protecting our environment. It's a gift. And right now, the earth is really under a lot of pressure. And now we have to do it in a way that's responsible. You know, I support wind farms, like you said, and I support nuclear power, and couldn't do nuclear power here on Long Island. We tried to do that. Other people tried to do that back in the 80s, I think. But everybody's concerned, you know, if anything went wrong, no way to evacuate. But we have to try and do renewable energy. Mm-hmm. And we have to try and get off our addiction to fossil fuels. But we have to do it in a responsible way. We can't break the bank in the process where people go broke in the process. People are worried about affordability already. We can't see our utility prices go through the roof. We can't see gas prices go through the roof. We have to be responsible about how we balance our very important and urgent need to preserve and protect our environment with the fact that people have to be able to, you know, live their lives in the process. So, but it can be done. It's just, you know, let me just say this one last thing, and I know you have more questions.
Yeah.
Every problem we face in America and in the world is complicated. Nothing is simple. Anybody who says, why don't you just, doesn't know what they're talking about. To solve a complicated problem, you need people of goodwill to be able to sit across the table from each other and negotiate a settlement to figure out how to move forward together. You cannot solve complicated problems in an environment of fear and anger, which is what we have in our country right now, with everybody just yelling at each other and pointing fingers at each other and attacking each other. So we have to figure out, how can we get people to work together to solve the problems? When I was in Congress, I was the vice chairman of a group called the Problem Solvers Caucus, 25 Democrats and 25 Republicans that would meet every week to try and find common ground and solve problems together. That's how we got a big infrastructure bill down. We got the CHIPS Act and a whole bunch of the COVID stuff. So stop with all the BS. Stop with all the fighting. Let's work together. Let's solve problems. Let's try and help people make their lives better.
So just as you mentioned, you have noticed, and many of us have noticed, that Congress recently has been the least productive it's been almost in all of U.S. history.
It's awful.
Yeah. And as a common, as you call yourself a common sense, middle of the road Democrat, do you think there's a place for you in such a divided and, I would say, hateful Congress?
I think that's what the people are clamoring for. You know, I've always been this, had the same message of, you know, try to work together, try to solve problems. I'm a Democrat. I'll always be a Democrat. I'm not going to sacrifice my values, but I'll negotiate with anybody. Mm-hmm. I'll negotiate with conservatives. I'll negotiate with progressives. I'll negotiate with anybody if you want to try and actually solve problems and help people. That's what people are hungering for in our country right now. Now, I told you before I ran for governor, I got my butt kicked. And I had run for governor once time before that, and I had run for other offices that I won, but I always had a primary. I was never like the picked candidate by the party. This is the first time that they're saying, no, we want you to run. And they know what my message is. Work across party lines. Work with all the different folks from progressives to conservatives. Work together to solve problems and get things done for the people. So if I go back to Washington and I'll have some seniority because I was there for 6 years before, and I win this race, I can say, listen, I won on the message in a tough seat of saying, let's work together. That's what the people want. And I'll be able to speak to my colleagues on the floor of the House. I've given a lot of speeches on the floor of the House. There were like 50 people, 10 people in the room. I was on C-SPAN. If I get sworn in a special election in February, I'll give a speech to all my colleagues. Mm-hmm. You know what I'll say to them? Wake up! The people are sick of this. They want us to work together to actually solve the problems that they're worried about in their lives. And that'll be an exciting thing for me. It'll be like my whole life has conspired for that moment, to try and bring what I think is an important message to the United States Congress, which is that, you know, the Congress is never popular. Now it's really unpopular. You know, you said it, Harry Truman used to call his Congress the do-nothing Congress. This is the do-nothing-est Congress. They're not doing anything. And so people are sick of it. So we need to wake up and get them working together.
So you've mentioned that your opponent, Mazie Pillup, has just run the party line and has done basic ideas. And you said you would do all of that and more, including challenge Joe Biden. Can you go into that a little further?
Well, let me just say that my opponent refuses to debate me. Mm-hmm. She refuses. She won't come on your radio show.
Yeah.
She refuses to go out and do press conferences. She's just using these talk points given to her by the party bosses and just not giving any detailed policy prescriptions. I'm giving detailed policy prescriptions. And I'm willing to stand up to my own party. I'm willing to stand up to anybody if I think it's the right thing to do. I mean, look, I ran for governor against the incumbent governor. Twice I did it. So, didn't work out that well for me. But I got the things I was fighting for each time. Joe Biden. Right now, you know, I supported the president. I still support the president.
Yeah.
But I want him to do more on the immigration crisis. You know, we see all these people coming over the border. He's got to make it a priority. Now, he laid out a comprehensive plan when he first came into office, but we haven't heard much about it since. I wrote a letter to him the other day, and I wrote a letter to Speaker Johnson and Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, and I said, we've got to do a bipartisan solution to fix the border crisis. We have to secure the border, and we have to treat people like human beings in the process. And both parties have used this as a weapon since the 1980s. That was the last time we had a real immigration deal. Mm-hmm. I wrote an op-ed piece with Peter King, who's a Republican congressman from the South Shore. He's not in office anymore. But he and I wrote an op-ed piece together a couple of years ago where we came to a compromise. And it was in the New York Times. The New York Times gave it the headline. We didn't give it the headline. They called it the Grand Compromise, that said, you know, the Dreamers, people that were brought here as young kids, came up through grade school, learned the Pledge of Allegiance like you do, sang the songs in class and did their finger painting and learned the math and reading and, you know, grew. Now they graduated from high school and they're either in college or they're veterans or they're working a full-time job. Give them a pathway to citizenship. You're not going to send them back to their countries. They've been living here for 20 years. You know, the same thing with the TPS recipients, people that were from a war-torn country or from a earthquake or something. We invited them to America. They've been here 20, 30 years. Give them a pathway to citizenship. And then there's millions of other people that have been here for 30 years, followed the rules, except for coming in the wrong way. Mm-hmm. Let's get these five. This is me and Peter King, big Republican and me together, compromise. 5 million people. Let's either give them a pathway to citizenship or a pathway to legalization. Some people, we won't give them a pathway to citizenship, but we'll put them so they're legal so they can pay Social Security taxes, et cetera, and not live underground. 5 million people, you have to, among other things, pay a $2,000 fee. 5 million times 2,000 is $10 billion. With that $10 billion, give $5 billion to the Republicans, give $5 million to the Democrats. The Republicans want to build a wall. They want to do more stuff, physical structures on the border. Okay, you go do that. Give $5 billion to the Democrats. They want more immigration judges so they can process these cases more quickly. They want to have more border security like radar and things like that. They want to invest in Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala, where the Northern Triangle, where all these people are streaming over the border because their life in their countries is so miserable. So let's do a compromise. We're fighting with each other is not helping anybody. Why are they doing this for so many years? So I've said to the president, to his staff, and I wrote a letter to him, mm-hmm. Why don't you propose a bipartisan solution? Do what President Clinton used to do. When they would attack him, he would come out with a moderate bipartisan solution. If the Republicans go along with him and the Democrats go along with him, then we can move the country forward. Mm-hmm. If they don't go along with him, he could say, hey, what are you, just playing politics? Which is what a lot of people are doing. So I've called the president out on that, and I've always stood up. The Newsday wrote a story the other day, Swazi sticks to the middle lane. Mm-hmm. I stand up to my members of my own party about Israel. I don't like how the far left is. I'm 100% pro Israel. So, and when members of my party or the other party are not for Israel, I'll fight against them and stand up and be outspoken about it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Mr. Swazi. We really appreciate it with such a busy schedule such as yours. And can you tell us a little bit about early voting information or when Election Day is for the special election?
Yes, Nathan. Thank you again for having me on your show. I really appreciate it. I love Schreiber High School. Mm-hmm. I always say that my district is the smartest congressional district in the country. You look at the Regeneron scholars. We had more people from my congressional district than any congressional district in the United States of America. And five of them came out of Schreiber. So we love Schreiber. It's a great school, great teachers, great administrators, great students here. Yes, early voting starts on February 3rd. Don't wait till February 13th. Vote on February 3rd. 18 years or older, vote on February 13th. If you can't vote, or vote on February 3rd for early voting. If you can't vote, all of you tell your parents to vote. Vote for Swazi. We need you guys to get people out to vote. I need your help. This is going to be a tough election. If you want to make things better in the world, you got to be involved in elections. So early voting starts February 3rd. Actual election day is February 13th.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Before we go, I have to read the disclaimer just in case we said anything wrong, which I don't think we did. But the program you're listening to may contain language or material that could be considered offensive. The views expressed are those of the DJ, not necessarily those of WDOT or other WDOT station members. We therefore advise you to carefully consider whether you or your children should listen. Thank you again to Mr. Swazi for coming on our show. We wish you the best of luck on Election Day. That is it for us today. We will be back next week the week after on Monday, just before midterm week for all of you guys. So thank you guys for listening. I'm Nathan Jackman, sound engineer Brian Barr here, signing off.